And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 492. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
No Dan Sullivan this week because he is currently in a car on his way back from Develop up in Brighton, which is just wrapping itself up now, I guess, the big conference that they do every year. There's always a mobile presence. We've got people up there who've been poking and prodding upcoming games and whatnot. So do check the site next week for all of Dan's stories, which he'll be putting up once he recovers, because it gets a bit exhausting. I know it sounds like a kind of first world problem complaining about going to events and that. But
everyone that's come back is ill as well, from what I've heard.
Oh, the conference lurgy is a thing. We've mentioned that plenty on the podcast as well. I usually escape it, but we'll see how we go. I mentioned last week that I'm going to be going to Hong Kong over the weekend for Pocket Gamer Connects Hong Kong, which is the first time we've done a show over there. We've been gradually expanding our reach from places like San Francisco and Seattle, London, Helsinki. We're going to Jordan in a little bit as well. And this is the first time we've been to China, which is going to be exciting. But it's only the Hong Kong bit, which, as I understand it, is very anglicized and English. And so it's not kind of the true, inverted commas, China. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. But as a result, as I mentioned, there won't be a podcast next week because I'll be on a plane at that time. Also, someone's got in contact with me. A couple of people have actually saying, am I going to be there? I am, specifically Johnson Blue Xiao. I'm probably pronouncing that name wrong. Contacted me to say, will I be there? Yes, I will. If you're coming to the show, do let me know and we'll hook up and say yo. Are you going to be, I guess you're going to be looking after all the website stuff in our absence. Not that many biz folks are going, is that right?
I believe so, yeah. I think we're all staying put while you guys, you know, fly around the globe and enjoy yourself.
It's kind of going to be 4 days of intense stress. But again, first of all, problems. We're really looking forward to it, and we really hope it goes well. So we've got plenty to squeeze in this week before I bail. Specifically, we're going to be talking about Minecraft Earth and how you can get involved in the closed beta. We're going to be mentioning Cuphead's new installment in the franchise, which isn't actually a game. We're going to be talking, of course, the Nintendo Switch Lite and all of the varying takes on whether it is a good or a bad thing, plus a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Dr. Mario World, Tekken, What Remains of Edith Finch on Switch, the mighty quest for epic loot, and more. But first, the news. So I got my first proper look at Minecraft Earth at one of the Apple conferences, the one that was a couple of months ago, where they busted out on stage and they showed some people standing around a table building things with Minecraft blocks. Now, you have a chance to get involved with the closed beta. So if you go to the front page of PG right now, you'll probably see an article up talking about it. There's a little announcement video that they've released, which is giving you some additional information. But if you cut through all the blurb, what you'll discover is there is an official site you can go to sign up. You need to be running at least Android 7 or iOS 10. In order to get involved with this thing. They let you know that any progress you make in the beta won't carry over onto the main game, which is pretty standard, but just to let you know, don't build your amazing empire and then be absolutely distraught when it's crumbled into dust by the time the real game comes out. Them's the breaks with betas. But you can go and get involved to it. Now, you did the review for Harry Potter Wizards Unite.
I did.
Which was the other AR game that came out recently following Pokemon Go and everything. And this is Minecraft's version of that. I guess you were quite lukewarm on Wizards Unite. How interested are you in Minecraft Earth?
I mean, Minecraft has never done it for me. I realise what a global phenomenon it is and how big the franchise is, but it's never really appealed to me. I think I'm a generation too late, maybe. And I know that's, I know I'm quite young as a
You're but trying to make out like you're too old for Minecraft.
Yeah,
you. Basically. My God.
I mean, it's just never been my thing. Have you played much Minecraft?
I played it when it first came out because obviously it was a huge deal and we needed to check what it was. And then when it came to mobile, when they released the iPad version, I spent a bunch of time in that. No, I admit that general mining games, any of those purely open-ended creation games where you just run around hacking blocks and then smushing them together, rocks and stone, and fashioning them into twigs and using the twigs to build torches and using the torches to light your way and yada, 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 they're not especially my thing either. I think that a lot of games have that wall that they throw up now because mining or survival mechanics have found their way into everything. I mean, even into things like standard first-person shooters or third-person shooters, they include a little bit of it, a little bit of survival mechanics where you have to put weapons together. Even in things like The Last of Us, they had those token kind of, you
crafting.
Collect a couple of bits and craft something together. But, I mean, as part of what made Fortnite so successful is it's, you know, a battle royale, but there's building in it, like in Minecraft. So it was a fusion of things that everybody of that generation understand.
I think the building element, it should be able to, you know, transcend, I say, to the real world, the AR world, quite well. Mm. And there's a lot of creativity you can do with it. I don't know. The AR aspect for mobile, I don't think that's what won people over with Pokemon. And obviously it hasn't, for the most part, won people over with Harry Potter. It is the IP itself.
Yeah.
Minecraft could potentially be a Pokemon Go. I don't think it will be as big as Pokemon Go. I don't think anything we'll see like would be that, but I could see it being bigger than Harry Potter, certainly.
Well, it feels like it's a very different kind of game, even though we've looped it into the Pokemon Go and Harry Potter Wizards Unite, because it's another big IP with an AR. It's the one that diverts most from the previous formula. Those other ones are location-based, where you're wandering around and effectively trying to discover things or capture things or whatever it might be. That, as far as I've understood it from the demos and the videos, that's not the deal with Minecraft Earth. This is just allowing you to build things, but giving you the overview of being able to walk around your structure and place objects in 3D space. So it's like a very different kind of game, different utilization of the tech, and one which is very well suited to something like a building game, because a couple of the good AR games I've played, and Euclidean World, Euclidean Skies, I think the name of the one of the best ones I've played. If you look for the video on that, you can see me, and it's kind of a game that's a little bit Monument Valley, but there are these huge platforms floating in space, and you can kind of look around and look underneath and check it from all angles to see what you need to do next. That was a really good, effective, interactive, fun use of AR for me, because I found myself like deliberately walking around the room to try and kind of size it up from every possible angle. And that's something you could do within the game just by swiping, but it was easier, it was more natural and more fun to do it by physically wandering around. With this, if you're building structures, the idea of being able to, you know, survey it from every angle and go in close and go far away, and like, this is something that actual architects would like to use. They are more and more now playing with VR. My partner's an interior architect, and all the things that they design and that they render, they then put it into a VR visual sim thing so that they can hold their phone up and look around and see what it looks like in 3D space.
Like Iron Man.
I mean, yeah, sure, why not? Yes, exactly like Iron Man, except without all the holograms and the good suit and all the Iron Man stuff. And that gives you, you know, a much better sense of what the space feels like. And yeah, for that, you know, this is probably cribbing on that idea.
Agreed. I think there's a lot they can do. I was saying from the trailer, they're showing off stuff like TNT blocks exploding in the background and everything like that. So there's so much they can do with Minecraft. Your imagination is your limit, basically.
Yeah. So if you want to go and get involved with it, as I say, check the site, click the links, you'll find the official site there and you can sign up and get involved.
And it rolls out this summer.
This summer, yeah, for the release date, you're quite right. So moving on to Cuphead, which has continued to kind of grow in success over time as it's been ported onto different platforms. It came over to the Switch. That was the last platform it landed on, and it performed really well. Everyone seems to just find it a fantastic and engaging, if incredibly hard, game.
Yep. I did the review for that as well.
You did, didn't you? And you really enjoyed it. So the next step here is a slightly unusual one. Rather than announcing a sequel, they've announced an animated series that they're going to be making in conjunction with Netflix.
Hell yes, they did.
So you did the story on this one. What can you tell us about it?
So it's called The Cuphead Show, animation style inspired by the 1930s. Is it Fleischer cartoons? I don't know.
I would say Fleischer, but
Fleischer cartoons,
know,
okay. I'll take your word.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's Netflix, King Features, and Studio MDHR, who obviously developed Cuphead. They're all working together to make a new animated show, and it sounds really interesting. I mean, it's going to take place on Inkwell Isle, where the game is set. It's going to feature all the bosses, well, some of the bosses you'd guess, and we're going to be following the adventures of Cuphead and Mugman. And it just sounds perfect for like a TV series. You know, the world is so alive, you know, the characters and everything, that they all have their distinct personalities and they are quite humorous. So I think that's going to work quite well, because I think it, from what I read, it's going to be like a comedy for kids, but also have like adult elements.
Well, I think it has to, because this is one of these weird cases where one medium influenced another medium, and now it's kind of reverse influencing the original medium again, because Cuphead itself is based on the 1930s style animation that they got from things like the very, very, very early Disney, like the original Mickey Mouse cartoons, and then things later like Fritz the Cat and those other kind of weird, unusual looking, Betty Boop and all that. That's what the animation style was, which originally was, you know, it's created for kids, but on reflection, some of it looks quite creepy. And that's what Cuphead was made to look like. Now they've come back and they're actually doing an animated show in that style. So it's kind of gone back to the original medium again, only with these modern characters. And the guys who are doing it, the people who they're working with, the people who are responsible for things like Rocco's Modern Life, which itself is kind of a quite a zany, unusual, not adult, but it's got adult elements in it. It was kind of a bit on the racy, weird side of things.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about the, you know, the characters looking a bit creepy back in the 1930s and everything like that. Because if you look at the artwork, it's only one picture, basically, for the show. They've added a bit more distinctive features to Cuphead and Mugman's face to make him a bit more child-friendly. It's a bit more like, so it's a bit more, I don't know, like SpongeBob-ish, as opposed to like...
You think they've made him cute?
I think they've made him less creepy, because if you look at him in the game opposed to it, he's not creepy at all, but I can see how that style and everything can perceive to small children as, you know, a little bit scary.
Oh, I find it unsettling. I think that's part of the draw of it. You know, everyone has that weird perpetual motion where they're always bobbing on the spot rather than standing still. And I've always found that stuff quite eerie. That's part of the fun of it.
Fair enough.
So we don't know exactly when it's going to be going live, but we just know that they're currently working on it. You can see more on the story on PG Biz, which you have written, Matthew. So go and check that out if you're interested.
That also explains why, you know, the DLC's been delayed so long.
Because they're working on the series?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know,
needing contracts.
When did the game come out? 2017, I think. And then the DLC was announced the E3 after, and then it's just been delayed and delayed and delayed. It's just been delayed last week to 2020 again. I think it's exactly for that reason.
Well, it better be good then.
Yeah, no pressure.
So, big news of the week, I expect, everyone's been chatting about. Nintendo, they have finally revealed the form factor, price, colours, and all the rest of it of the Nintendo Switch Lite. It was pretty much expected that at one point they would release their new slimline version of the Nintendo Switch after its popularity, and Nintendo are well known for iterating on their consoles over and over and over, particularly their handheld ones, from light ones to XL ones and foldy ones and 3D ones, and, you know,
to new Nintendo 3DS XL Lite.
Yeah, sure, they'll eventually run out of initialisms. But we've got the Switch Lite. It's officially the cheap version of the Switch, purely designed for handheld. So we'll give you a brief rundown of what it's got and what it hasn't got, I guess, is the best way of doing it. So first thing to note is it is a little bit smaller. The whole thing has been shrunk down a smidge. It's a thinner 5.5-inch display, whereas the original one is 6.2-inch. You've got an improved D-pad. Apparently the D-pad on the original Joy-Cons wasn't amazing. That's what I hear.
It was the broken-up D-pad.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, people weren't so impressed with it. This is an improved version of that. Part of shrinking the form factor has meant that they've kept it exclusively handheld, by which I mean you can't dock it, number one. Number two, you can't detach the Joy-Cons. There are no Joy-Cons. It's all part of a one-block unit.
Correct.
This raises some issues when it comes to games that require you to detach both of the Joy-Cons on the traditional Switch and then wave your arms around. So I'm thinking that, what's the punchy game? The arms game and things like that?
Yeah, arms, that's right.
Sure, why not? That's not going to be playable using the default controllers. So it requires you then to grab some Joy-Cons from the old machine, sync them up with the Switch, and then use those.
It's basically a Pokemon machine.
Is that how you view? Is that your take? It's the Pokemon machine.
I mean, you know, Pokemon prints money, and this is because so many people just bought a DS just to play Pokemon. And I think with Pokemon releasing in November, this is absolutely ideal, and it's going to sell like hotcakes for that reason.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The hottest takes I saw online was everyone going on about like for the fact that they've removed the option to dock, so you can no longer plug it into a dock and then play it on a big screen.
Yeah, it's a Switch that's not a Switch.
Yeah, it's a Switch that's a stay. It's a single. It's like, you know, the whole point of the Switch was it has these two modes and this doesn't. And a lot of people were going, what is even a dock? Like, who even docks their console? I only ever play it handheld, etc. You're like, all right, fine. But A, that's kind of what made a Switch a Switch. And B, if I was going to get one of these things, and maybe I would be using it wrong, I would 100% be docking it most of the time.
Yeah, I play it in docked mode majority of the time. I mean, obviously on trips, wherever, I do take it, but the majority of my time is in docked. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Most people treat it as a handheld.
Which is fine, because that's what Nintendo do, and that's what they've been so successful at doing. And the other thing it doesn't have is it doesn't have a kickstand. Which is understandable on the one hand, because you can't detach the Joy-Cons. So you need to be holding it to play. You can't put it down on a table unless you have another pair of Joy-Cons lying around from the old system that you can wave them around. You know, the stand was only really useful if you were going to either A, be watching something. Have they got Netflix support on it? They do have it now, right?
I don't think we've got Netflix yet.
Have you still not got Netflix?
No, I don't think so. We got YouTube a couple months ago.
okay, fine.
I'm pretty sure we ain't got Netflix.
Well, the only reason to have the kickstand is if you're going to be putting the screen on a table and then stepping away with the controllers. You can't do that. It's one block unit, so it's not, that doesn't seem much of a surprise to me.
No, I get why. It's not a big thing to add on, though, is it? It doesn't like cost them anything. I imagine, to just add a little kickstand. Because have you seen the kickstand anyway? It's only.
It's a bit rubbish.
It's a flimsy bit of plastic. So
takes up space, though, and when you're trying to compress the space as they're trying to do on this, make the whole thing a little bit smaller. I guess every millimeter counts to try and squeeze the components in. So, on the plus side, apparently they're upping the battery life.
Yep, 20 to 30%.
Yeah, up to apparently like maximum 6 hours based on what you're playing, which is supposed to be a little bit better than the original unit. And that's quite good.
Yeah, so it's handy.
And they've got pretty colours. So you've got a yellow one, you've got a turquoise one, and there's one which is grey, and the different controllers have slightly different colours on them. They all look really nice.
Where's my purple one?
There's purple on the grey one. One of the colours that they use is purple, I'm pretty sure.
It's not good. It should be like the classic see-through purple Game Boy.
Oh, you want that stuff, do you? The old transparent. That is a very 2000 look.
Yeah, I love it, though. Like, and this is the thing. Nintendo seems, ever since like the GameCube, Nintendo just hates purple. I feel like still no purple Joy-Cons. I'm still waiting for my purple Joy-Cons. Where are they, Nintendo?
The other big thing about this is obviously the price. So this is, instead of retailing at around about £289 and or dollars, depending on where you are, this is $200 straight. So I imagine in the UK or in the EU, we're going to get this for around £200 as well, because we get horribly scalped. So you're making a fairly decent saving. I think people wanted it to be a bit cheaper, but then I'm not sure how much cheaper they could make it. Nintendo is one of the few companies that's been able to make profits on their consoles, whereas most people sell them at cost or a loss. So I imagine that they couldn't make it much cheaper and still make it practical for them to sell the thing.
No, I think getting it under the $200 mark is a big get, because it's $199.99. I think that's a good price point for it. Nintendo have come out and said it's not going to kill off 3DS support, which is a blatant lie, because it clearly is. But the cheapest 2DS available now is $79.99.
Mm-hmm.
It's only $100 cheaper than the regular Switch. So for a lot of people, they might just be thinking, well, may as well just get the real thing.
Yeah, I would be torn, because not having gotten one when it originally launched, I'm sitting here going, which one would I want to get? And I don't know. I kind of definitely want the ability to dock the thing.
Mm.
And this doesn't have it. So I guess I'm sticking with the traditional Switch. I mean, I assume that they're going to do a pro version at some point, but they have kind of said that, no, this is the only console we're launching in 2019. So there's not going to be a more premium version as opposed to a cheaper one, like an XL or something. There's not going to be another version this year. While
That's
they
right.
may iterate it on it again in future, it ain't coming anytime soon. So this is it for 2019. And I really want that dock. Like, so this is kind of a no-go for me, which is a shame, because it looks lovely. I like the colors. I like the look. And obviously the price point is nice, but like no dock, no Switch in my Switch. I don't know.
For you, James, what does Nintendo have to do to get you to buy a Switch then?
It's not that. There are already good reasons for me to go out and buy one. It's just the money thing. It's a time thing as well. It's the fact that I've got Android and iOS and I have to be playing all this stuff for mobile, and I've got an Xbox One and a PS4 and an Oculus Rift. I've got plenty going on. And if I then start throwing down like 60 hours into Breath of the Wild, then I've also got a wife and occasionally I should talk to her.
I mean, that trip to Hong Kong, you know, could be perfect timing.
The takes on this have been unusual. I'm not sure if people are delighted about this or not. It's gotten kind of a mixed reaction based on the lack of switching, the lack of kickstand, and the lack of detachable controllers. The other thing people have said is like, hang on, non-detachable controllers, smaller form factor, two dual sticks, little screen. This is a PS Vita.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
Nintendo's made the PS Vita.
Yeah, I mean, that was what people were saying from day one, because all obviously the indies and everything started coming over to Switch, which originally were appearing on the likes of Vita and everything like that. So, you know, more options is always a good thing. At the end of the day, if you're not bothered about it, just don't buy it.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess I'll have to buy the older unit if I ever do. But, you know, a PS Vita where people are actually buying it and playing the games on it, that's a good thing. R.I.P. the Vita. You can see the trailer and everything up on Pocket Gamer. The launch date, very important, is 20th of September. That's when it will be available worldwide, unless you want to hold on for that little grey with the with the other colour bit versions. So it's the Zacian or Zacian and Zamenta version.
Yeah, Zamazenta. Yeah, so the Pokemon special editions.
Right, yeah. So that's a Pokemon one. So that's the grey one with the different coloured buttons on it. That will be out November the 8th. So if you hang on like a few weeks, you'll be able to grab it. But otherwise, September 20th for this. Go and get your pre-orders in or whatever right now. Out and about this week, we're going to go straight in to the mobile reviews with Dr. Mario World. It came out of its soft launchy-ish period and went live this week. We've got videos up, we've got reviews up, we've pretty much all been playing it to some degree or another. I've done about 2 hours worth, other people have done a lot more, and not going to bury the lead here. Our review, quote, is easily Nintendo's weakest game in years.
Oof.
This is from Cameron Bold, who did the review. We've been talking to Dave Aubrey, who's also one of the big reviewers for PG, and they have just been swapping different ways in which this game disappointed them. So, that's quite big for a Nintendo game, because generally everybody seems to love them to varying degrees of, like, is it great or is it awesome? And this one is getting shot down by our staff, and I've had a little look online, and I think the opinion is reflected online as well. Other people don't like it. So why? Why are people down on Dr. Mario World? The game itself is the Match 3 puzzler, basically. So it's carrying on in a similar form from the original games. You drag your little capsule out from the bottom of the screen and you try and match the colour of the capsule to the different viruses on the screen and then eliminate them. The levels are authored. It's not a randomly generated thing. There are little blocks and things and walls in the way, and there are shells that are there that if you get match them with the shell colour, the shells fly all over the place and eliminate entire rows. And then individual characters have special powers you can use to smash rows up or do whatever they do. I think you get to choose from three at the very beginning: Mario, Bowser, or Peach. For the first couple of hours or so, which is what I've played, when you play through about maybe like 20, 30 levels and get to the end of the first world, it's fine. Like, it's a straight Match 3 puzzler. I didn't have a problem personally with the controls or anything. The movement stuff was okay. It didn't particularly stand out.
No,
amongst the other ones.
Doesn't wow you.
No, not really. So in that sense, I was like, all right, Nintendo's done a Match 3 puzzler that's got Mario in it. Fun. It's not really any better, different to something like a Candy Crush, even with the additional mechanics of, you know, shells and whatnot. All those Candy Crush games have been iterated on so many times now. They've got loads of weird sub-features. If you collect a certain thing, this one explodes, or this one gets rid of this color. And, you know, they've got lots and lots of their own different, like, buffs and special moves and powers. So that's not new either. However, once you spent a really long time with the game, that's when things start getting horrible, apparently. How long have you played? Have you got to where it starts to lock you out yet?
Yeah, so I'm about 3 to 4 hours in. I've done the first couple of worlds. Obviously done the 20 tutorial levels, which, you know, as you said, they're very, very basic. You just want to get through them and get to the proper, more difficult levels.
Mm.
So you got 5 hearts, and every time you play a level, you use a heart. And if you pass that level, you get the heart back. But every time, obviously, you fail, you lose that heart and so on. And then your hearts regenerate every 30 minutes.
That's right.
There is no option for unlimited play. I mean, let me go back to that slightly. So there is an option for unlimited play, but you have to pay 30 diamonds, which is £5, for an hour of unlimited play.
Yeah, so 30 gems gives you an hour. An hour of unlimited play in a match 3 puzzler.
I know. So, if they said, give us £5 and it's unlimited play forever, that seems fair. You know, I'd more than happily pay £5 to have Dr. Mario on my phone.
To unlock it, yeah.
Yeah, to unlock it forever, like they did with Super Mario Run. But it seems, the lack of money, I'm guessing, from what they made from Super Mario Run, seen them go down this route.
Mm-hmm. That's what everybody has said. So they did do a premium game with Mario Run. It was around about £8 or £9. And whilst it obviously sold really, really well, it didn't sell well enough. Mm. And they've had much more luck, it seems, with the free-to-play monetization, as everybody seems to have discovered on mobile, that's the way to go. And this seems a particularly grim implementation of it. So it's using all of the more unpleasant aspects of the free-to-play system. So yes, you run out of hearts very quickly, and then you have to wait for ages for to have them recharge. So 1 heart an hour, and you can play the level in 30 seconds and the heart's gone. Now I have to wait another half an hour, so that sucks. If you pause mid-level and then quit, then you still lose the heart. If you try and close the app mid-game and then try and come back to it, or if you try and close it and reboot it, you still lose the heart. And so if you just try and restart a level from the beginning, I've messed this one up, you're going to lose that heart. So there are so many barriers and so few chances, so little energy. It's not like they give you 10 hearts or 20 hearts or something like that. Max 5. And then the 30 gems for unlimited play thing, you think, all right, maybe I'll just spend an hour hardcoring it and I'll spend a fiver on that. You can't buy 30 gems. You can buy 20 gems. You get a pack of those, or you can buy a pack of 50 gems.
Yeah.
So it's very deliberately done so that you have to buy 2 20s or 1 50 and have more than you need and spend more money. And that's just, spend that cash to play for an hour and then it goes back to normal again. This is the stuff that gives mobile, for me, a bad name. It's the stuff where people complain about pay to win and all that kind of thing. Yeah, this is what this is.
100%.
That sucks, because if they had just released it as a premium thing, obviously we'd be happier, but maybe they wouldn't make as much money, because people will spend this cash, and that's the problem. While the model continues to prove successful, while there are people at the top end who will just throw tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of cash, no matter what, they'll continue to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
They are being rewarded for being this cynical.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the microtransactions, which, as we've touched on, is pretty horrendous, the big crushing blow for me is that the game is just lifeless. It's got Dr. Mario, Peach, Bowser, and an abundance of other characters, which you have to unlock through a random... You could describe it as a loot box, but I don't think it's that far. But it's not a gacha thing.
It's another gacha system.
Yeah. But they've not got any of the Mario sounds surrounding them. You've got the Dr. Mario music, but apart from that, they're basically just skins. And it generally doesn't feel like a Nintendo game. It feels like somebody's hacked and ripped it and just made it with, the Nintendo assets. It's really strange.
Which makes sense, because I think it's a DNA, this one, I believe.
I believe so. And Line, is it, I think, maybe? Or is it LHN?
And Cameron also pointed this thing out. He said it feels passionless. It feels like it's kind of bland. It doesn't have that Nintendo character and charm that you would expect from their games. And even Super Mario Run had that.
Yeah.
Because, it's actually a very good game when you sit down and play it. They're very cleverly designed levels. And fully animated Mario, and, he's jumping around and giving it woohoo and all the stuff you'd expect. And it does feel very Nintendo. And this, feels flat, feels cynical, feels like it's just trying to grind cash out of you. And once you hit a point, it's just like, ugh, I don't want to play this anymore.
That's what I mean, that special magic that Nintendo has in, 99% of their games. There's none of it here.
So, unfortunately, it is a 3 out of 10 or 1.5 stars for us on this one, which is a sad thing to do to Nintendo game, but unfortunately, it's just it just doesn't cut it. So we would kind of advise against Dr. Mario World. Fingers crossed for Mario Kart Rush, but I am expecting similar stuff there. We've already covered that game's energy system in the soft launch, so expect more of this. We'll just have to hope it's not as egregiously implemented as it is here. Now, moving on a little bit. So I haven't played this. Dave Aubrey's played it and actually says it's surprisingly good. Teppan. So this is apparently what happens when you get Hearthstone and you smash it together with all the Capcom IP. So this is something that you'll approve of with your Smash Brothers universe colliding, different characters from all over the shop battling each other, Mega Man fighting Ryu.
I can say.
And all that. So that's that, only it's on a card game style thing. So I've seen some videos of it running, and yes, cards at the bottom, energy system constantly creeping up, drag your cards out into the playing field and then set them against the other characters and your enemies and see who wins. And yeah, very, very Hearthstone, only the cards themselves are all Morrigan and that. And apparently it's really quite good. What he's been saying, Dave Aubrey, who did the review for it, it's instead of it just being like completely turn-based, you actually have to activate the action cards to create special effects. It's standard in a lot of ways, but the real-time thing, Dave reckons, really sets it apart from the others. So you have to keep engaged. You can't just sort of make a move and then put it down and wait for your next move. You have to keep going, going, going. Keep your eye on what the enemy's doing. The timer is always counting down, and it keeps you a little bit more engaged than you otherwise would be. The art's all very nice, which is a big part of these card collection games, because you want the characters out on screen. You want to see them looking good. They do look good. I'll give them credit. Morrigan's art is ridiculous in terms of the unnecessary cleavage, but that's built into the Morrigan character at this point. I'm kind of immune to it. But what they've done with, you know, all the other characters, people coming in from Resident Evil, Abbott Wesker's there, and, you know, it looks, purely visually, very nicely done. And I trust Dave because he has played a lot of these games and he's fairly honest when he's like, this sucks.
Yeah, it looks attractive. I mean, is this the game that's been going around the web when, I think it's Capcom, it must be, who've been delivering like these boxes with locks on and then they've been counting down to a certain date earlier in the week. And then Yeah, and then I'm pretty sure this is the same game and people have basically been smashing open the boxes. And okay. Instead of waiting for the countdown, I'm pretty sure this is the game that I've seen going round. So,
God,
have you not seen any of that?
No, not to, smashing open like PR boxes to get to free to play card battler info. Is this where we're at? Jesus. Okay, fine. Well, you can download it now. It's free to play on iPhone and iPad and Android as well. Teppan is the name, and we liked it. And Dave's done a whole ton of guides on how to get you started in the game, nice and quick. So go and have a look at that. Now, something that I played through when it was on PS4, it's now moved over onto the Switch, and apparently it's done so in style. What Remains of Edith Finch? Did you play this at any point?
I didn't. I've got it set on my PlayStation media bar ready. I need to jump into it. It is a crime I haven't played it yet, to be honest.
Well, it's a very wistful indie game style, first-person narrative adventure. It's one of those things that you could put in the same bracket as Gone Home or, you know, maybe Firewatch, or where it's mostly about the narrative and there's a few little puzzly things. But for the most part, first-person adventure, you're exploring this old house and the old house contains memories. Each room seems to contain information about a member of the family and what happened to them. And then it disappears on these flights of fancy telling you about a particular thing that they did. It's really nicely done. It's a lovely thing. It's not particularly long. I really enjoyed my time with it, but I do like these kind of games. It's got a lot of, you know, emotional heft when you play it. And now it's on Switch. Rick Cowley has risen from the dead in order to come and review it for us. And the bit we were interested in is, does it work well on Switch? And the answer is yes. The occasional bit of pop-up does appear, different from the PS4 version, and there's a little bit of stutter from time to time. But then, you know, we are porting it onto a console that is significantly less powerful than a PS4. But apart from that, these occasional little stutters, there is nothing that's going to stop you from enjoying it in exactly the same way that we did in 2017 on the PS4. So he's given it a great big thumbs up. And it is a lovely game. I'd recommend you get your version played. But if you're a Switch fan and you're on the fence and wondering if they've messed it up, they haven't. Apparently, it's a cracker. So, What Remains of Edith Finch, that is out right now on Switch. Give that one a look. Ubisoft have put out their own dungeon crawly looty thing, which is called The Mighty Quest for Epic Loot. And it was supposed to be out in, like, July the 9th. I thought it'd been out for ages. But apparently it's maybe only just coming out now. Maybe it's just because it's just come out on Android.
Yeah, I think that might be right. It's been in soft launch for ages, I'm sure. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, but it's an isometric, cartoony dungeon crawling game where you're charging through with one finger, tap-ti-tap, swipe-ti-swipe. I think we covered another one not so long ago, which was another, you know, dungeon crawly cartoon thing. Haven't played it, or I feel like I did play it, but ages ago when it was in soft launch. There is a single-player campaign. You do have the option to do PvP stuff as well. But it's one of those simple portrait-style, play it with one thumb, slashy-slashy, tappy-tappy. We're probably going to do some coverage of it if we haven't already, but that's out for free right now on iPhone, iPad, and Android. Mighty Quest for Epic Loot is the name. Finally, unfortunately, I haven't played this, either the original one or the sequel, because I don't have a Switch. Dragon Quest Builders 2 came out. Now, this is the sequel to the original, which took the narrative of, I think, the original Dragon Quest, and then added the elements we were talking about earlier, so elements of Minecraft and survival stuff.
Mm.
And the levels were built around creating certain things or looking for certain things, but the story was still sitting there in the background. The sequel is more of the same, so this time it takes the narrative from Dragon Quest II, all the same stuff, apparently, but just layered on top of it, instead of being a straight RPG, you're building things and you're crafting things and you're mining for things. And that's the deal. Haven't played it. We've given it a 4 stars out of 5 or an 8 out of 10, saying that it's a decent expansion on the scale of the original. So there's more to do here. Block stack limits have been boosted if you're into that thing, so you can build bigger structures. And there's more traversal options, so you can get around the area much better. Apparently there's a hang glider. Like nice. Breath of the Wild style that they've thrown in. Yeah, so you can move around the islands much easier than you could before. But other than that, it is more of the same. I understand everybody really likes this. But according to Cameron, he gives it the thumbs up. It's 8 out of 10 from him, Dragon Quest Builders 2. And that's out on Switch right now. A little bit truncated this week because I've got to now go off and pack and prepare for Hong Kong. But thank you for listening, as always. There'll be a brief pause next week, but we'll be back again afterwards to cover more stuff. It'll be one of them bump around up episodes for 2 weeks. But in the meantime, do like, subscribe, yada, yada, yada. Check out the sites for more coverage, and we will catch you in a couple of weeks or so. See you then, Matt.
See you then.
And see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.